Thanks for tuning in to the Replatform podcast, sponsored by Crown Peak and Elastic Path, and hosted by me, James Gerd. A warm welcome if it's your first time. We put a load of effort into bringing you really interesting guests and great content for free. Help us keep it that way. Let other people in your network know about us so we get more listeners. Share our posts on LinkedIn and Twitter. And the best thing you can do is rate our show on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever else you might be listening if you haven't already. So thanks. And let me introduce our latest episode and then hand over to our guests. So our topic is around how e-commerce businesses can improve operational flexibility with Airtable. Airtable's had a lot of press recently. And Oliver Rhodes is our guest, who's a co-founder of Nola Apps. He's doing a lot of interesting work with a platform to help e-com businesses improve productivity in the tech stack. And we're going to find out like how and why today. So Oliver, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing, sir?
Yeah, good. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
I'm really
looking forward to getting into this.
Yeah, I am as well, because, you know, when we first spoke, I openly said I don't know enough about Airtable and I'm trying to learn it, where it fits in the tech stack. So let's start with, do you want to give people a bit of your background? Like, what are you doing and why are you doing this?
Yeah, so for anyone that doesn't know me, I was one of the founding team at Peoplevox, a warehouse software that was acquired by Descartes in 2020. So I did that for 10 years, designing tech stacks around warehouse management systems. And then I worked for 1 year in product lifecycle management at a startup and learned so much about everything that happens around creating products and bringing them to market, which was totally new to me, because warehouse systems is customer experience focused, but this was suddenly like very product and merchandising focused. So that was really interesting. I feel that kind of rounded me off a little bit. And then, yeah, for the last year and a half, in combination with Victoria Graves, who's my business partner, we've been doing a hybrid of tech advisory, so helping people on their plan their tech stack and make decisions on different tools, and using Airtable to build solutions for them. So I guess that's the short potted history of me.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I think this episode is going to add a lot of value to people because one thing we want to do is showcase the emerging ways that technology is being used and how tech stacks are becoming more and more flexible. So let's do the strategic piece before we get into like the practical element. So you do a lot, obviously you've got a lot of experience and background in that kind of operational, that back office side. So what are the common issues you see in business regards to like systems connectivity and interoperability? Like, what mistakes people make? What constraints hold businesses back?
I think just to unwind on those. So, give it. Can you do it in three bits for me? Like, what's the first bit?
I think the number one is like, what are the key operational issues that you see businesses facing due to like systems inefficiency?
Yeah, so I think the root cause of a lot of the pain in businesses is that they are looking at their tech stack and systems integration in an outdated way, which is they think about how Shopify connects to their warehouse or how their e-commerce platform connects to their ERP and how their e-commerce platform connects to the product information management system. And they'll have some kind of integration platform, iPaaS, that's kind of joining all these tools together. And like when you visualize a tech stack, I'm sure this is what everybody's got in their head. And what I learned from my time at Supply Compass, the PLM, was how many Google Sheets and Excel files and PDFs are actually running inside companies. And what we've found, and I think this is one of the biggest sources of operational inefficiency, is that everything else that isn't those core systems is the dark stack of everything else, Google Sheets and Excel files and PDFs. And I would throw into that bucket like Slack and Teams and email, basically any technology and systems that you're using, because those two are being looked at completely separately. We're not actually thinking about the interoperability of those workflows, and many, many functional workflows within an e-commerce business involve data flowing out of one of those tech stack systems and into a dark stack system, like a ClickUp, a Asana, a Monday, or a Trello. And because those two systems aren't connected, they end up duplicating data between the tech stack and the dark stack. So like all of the product data might be in your ERP, but it won't be in monday.com. So when we need to plan a product launch, we have to go into Monday and type in all the products and add all the rows. Is this kind of making sense, James? Do you get what I'm getting at? Yes, you see it with merchants.
Oh God, constantly the disparate systems aren't connected through any like true workflow, and therefore there are manual processes to get data pushed from one to the other, or they're, as you say, spread. I mean, I work with a huge business, which at the time, and this is about 7 years ago, was a billion plus business, and their entire content management update into the front end was done from an Excel sheet with macros pushing and generating HTML into an SFTP, and it's bonkers. It resonates massively.
And there's there's more specific use cases around like those workflows, but I think the bigger picture I'd want people to lead into this with is to not think about this as like replacing any one of those systems in the tech stack, which Airtable can do. I'd look at it from think of the three buckets of planning, data, and communication in your business. So how you plan and where you plan, the data in terms of the information that people need, and then communication. And if your data is in your ERP and Google Sheets, and then you're doing your planning in Asana or ClickUp or Monday, and then you're doing your communication on Teams or Slack or email, you're never bringing all of those three things together. And that seriously hampers your operational efficiency, often in businesses right at the time when they're trying to scale. So you start to add more people and you bring them in and they don't have access to the right data. Well, that means they have to ask someone for everything. You end up spending all your time in alignment meetings, like meetings after meetings after meetings, to try and figure out what's going on a project rather than just being able to find out. And then, you know, Slack is 999 for basically every process in your business that doesn't have a process. Every functional workflow that's broken is a Slack channel and it's an urgent message. And I think we can all agree we're sick to the teeth of that kind of information overload that happens there when we get told about something three times across three different channels, but we actually like, we don't want to do anything about it. We've been interrupted and then we forget about it, you know, and then we move on.
Yeah, I think that's a really nice concept. So with that in mind, where does Airtable fit in? Like, let's help people understand it, because some people would have come across it, some might have played around with it, but not many would have ever used it. So what is Airtable and how is it relevant to what we're talking about?
Yeah, so I think a good starting point is why aren't more people aware of it and using it? And I think the challenge with Airtable is it has been a sign-up online tool with lots of like kind of developers and low-code enthusiasts kind of using it. And then when someone in a kind of management role who's looking for like a planning tool compares it to a ClickUp, Asana, or a Monday.com, the learning curve's much higher. It takes a bit more work to get it going. So they kind of look at it and go like, oh, what the hell is this? It's all quite confusing. There's more to configure and set up. And that is true. It's definitely got a bigger learning curve than some of those tools. Certainly like Trello is just so easy. Everyone loves flying around in Trello, but it does kind of hit a limitation there at some point. And then Airtable's focus from a services and delivery perspective has been on the big companies, you know, like VF Corporation, you know, who own Timberland and many other brands. They're a huge Airtable user. Outdoor Voices, you know, they were a bit of a D2C darling. They were one of the big Airtable references. So it's used by 90% of the Fortune 500, but e-commerce companies haven't been the focus of Airtable sales efforts. And I feel like it does require, you know, what we're doing is allowing, like, bridging that gap between it being easy to use like a Asana or Monday, and then you've got, you know, an enterprise team that isn't really interested in these e-commerce businesses. We're kind of helping people kind of cross that chasm and realize the benefits so they can onboard and get using it much faster.
Attract, your complete product discovery growth engine. Create relevant shopping experiences that convert into sales and grow online revenue with personalized search, merchandising, and recommendation solutions powered by AI. Find out more at attract.com.
And it's definitely, not just you talking about it. I know, obviously, you're basing your service around bringing productivity gains by using Airtable specifically. But I've seen, apart from specialists like you, I've seen more people in the media referencing. I've seen other posts on LinkedIn referencing it more recently. I don't know whether this is just because I'm more aware of it now, I'm noticing it. But are you seeing that more businesses are starting to take this seriously and build it into their tech stack?
I think that's a bit of an echo chamber thing to some degree. I'm seeing that more businesses are taking it seriously and using it because we're taking it into businesses.
Right.
In terms of the platform, I think a big improvement that's occurred in the last year and a half that we've been implementing it is previously, like Airtable has, there's two parts to it. There's a kind of really good understanding is there's a base view, which looks like kind of an Excel file on steroids. And that is your relational database that is kind of the core of Airtable. So starting point, and a relational database works a little bit like a VLOOKUP if you're an Excel whiz and you don't know that term, relational database. So Airtable, the base setup side of it is a lot like what Microsoft Access would have been like. You know, for anyone that's been around long enough to remember Microsoft Access, it's a lot like that. Or I think, I can't remember, there was an Apple product. Do you remember the name of it? FileMaker? How's it? FileMaker was also a little bit like this, like allowed you to build your own tools, was very visual for building stuff. And that's what the base view is like. But then Airtable have been on this mission in the last year and a half to move towards having this base view, but also a interface view, which is like an attractive user interface. And what that has enabled us to do is build these interfaces for the users on top of the base, which means that you can onboard people to Airtable without them having to go through that learning curve of understanding how to use a base and know everything about a base to be able to use it. And also, you know, your thoughts around what if someone goes in and breaks something because they don't understand, you know, what if they're working on the database, they could, you know, mess with the data. The interfaces allow us to have way more control over how people are using it. And I think that aspect of it is now making it a lot better as from a commercial proposition to really come in and take over some of the more business critical functional workflows.
Yeah, that makes sense. Let's add a bit of tangible examples to this to help people. So one of the areas that you're focused on with Nolo is building out custom apps for people to improve their operational processes. And one of the areas we discussed prior to this podcast was product lifecycle management. So what are the issues that you've seen in the way that product lifecycle management is done? Let's start with that, and then we can go to where does Airtable fit in and what improvements can it make?
Yeah. I think the thing that resonates with almost everybody that I speak to about Airtable is that with the off-the-shelf SaaS platforms, you're buying 100% of the features often when you needed 20%. So we know we're paying more than we needed to. We know the implementation is going to take longer than we needed to. But we're being asked to commit to a platform now. We know it won't be easy to change and go to another platform. So we often have to buy technology ahead of where we are. And then we have that learning curve of a new SaaS platform, and we're tied to their future of all. If you go with the most established, it's probably a legacy code base and it's probably starting to creak. Or if you go with someone up and coming, they might be acquired and then the whole piece of software gets thrown in the bin. So I think everyone feels that pain of SaaS system selection. And that's where I found, yeah, and I experienced that at Supply Compass. Like, we built a PLM for fashion brands. We were the new kid on the block, and then the business ran out of money and the whole product went in the bin. Like, that can happen with, like, the new kid on the block. To contrast that to Centric PLM, which is like the most established enterprise PLM. On the other side of that, Centric is a really rigid enterprise software provider. It's very expensive. It takes a long time to implement. And it's a siloed functional workflow tool that doesn't connect into like your Asana and your Monday and your ClickUp type workflows. So I had that view from doing product lifecycle management. And where we started with this was actually with two brands I started working with at the time, Hype, the streetwear brand, and Rixo, who do, you know, like, I guess they're like, you know, kind of women's dresses, like relatively high end. Hype was about 20 million at the time, Rixo about £30 million business. And they both needed some aspects of PLM, you know, post Supply Compass, but they didn't need a full PLM. And so that was like one of the use cases that we really started building with. But what I quickly realized was that all of these software categories are just, they're all made up, and they all create like this barrier to learning for people when they're trying to understand new tools. They can be helpful to some degree, but like ERP as an acronym just causes problems, just the same as PIM. Like, if you say PIM to literally 90% of people who have founded an e-commerce business, they're like, their eyebrows go up and they're like, what are you talking about? What's a PIM? Like, just let me stop there for a second. And then what you find is you then have to explain the capabilities that make up a PIM. And obviously it's a lot more nuanced than that. So one of the starting points has been product data, because I had so much experience of that. And also, product data makes really good sense as a place to start your Airtable journey, because once you've got your product data, any workflow that you do using product data is already there. Like, go back to that example I gave of, if you've got all your product data in your ERP and then you want to track like your go-to-market in Asana, you have to copy all that information across. Whereas if it's already in Airtable, it's already in there. Kind of makes sense. And then the other reason for starting there is most businesses do their product data on a Google sheet. They allocate barcodes in a Google file or an Excel file. And the product doesn't really have anywhere to exist until it appears on Shopify or it goes into the ERP. And that's just not the way that businesses work if they're developing their own products and bringing them to market. You need that, you know, you're an inventory business. So inventory is important, but also product data is like the core of what you do. And Vic, my business partner, is a data person. She really understands product data and how that should be structured. And so that's kind of formed, that's really formed the backbone of our practice to date.
Yeah, so a question related to that, because this is a bit I find really interesting, because having worked with businesses where product data is a bit of a mess and there are limitations in e-commerce platforms in terms of how extensively you can enrich and how you structure product data for different storefronts, for example, for international, and how challenging it can be working across multiple storefronts. But for that, like PIMs historically have had a lot of value there, where you can do all of your data structure in a PIM and just push it out via the API. Yeah. I'd love to know in the context of Airtable, because I guess some people listening might be thinking, but can it handle like international versions? Like, I've got translated versions of content, or I've got lots of custom tagging and meta tags against my products to auto-populate categories on the front end. So can you give us a feel for how Airtable compares and fits into that piece?
Yes, the answer is yes, it can. I think the challenge the off-the-shelf PIMs have is that there's a, like any like SaaS platform, they're very resource intensive to get started. Like, you need to either raise a load of money to get yourself going, or if you're the big established player in the market, you've already raised loads of money, but possibly your software is now five, six, seven, eight, 9 years old. And for any merchant, like if we take Shopify as the example, any PIM is really trying to interface with that Shopify data structure. And as we all know, they just keep changing stuff. So I think I don't actually know if, I'm sure there is a PIM that is totally focused on Shopify, but I'm sure this applies to almost every e-commerce platform. The way that those two work together is so key, but all of the PIMs seem to try and work with all different types of platforms, and they just by default fall behind the latest tech. Like the Meta objects, for example, are incredibly powerful, and we've seen like huge adoption of Meta objects across some of our clients, particularly with multiple stores. Like we've got a client with 15 international stores, and you know, there it's almost as soon as Meta objects is being announced, they're like, right, this is going to solve huge problems for us in terms of how we're managing our data. And if you go and sit down with the pre-sales people from the PIMs, you know, first of all, are they up to speed with what's happening on Shopify? Is they on the cutting edge of doing this? And even if they are, where is catching up with the latest Shopify feature in their roadmap? Like, is it on the roadmap? And if it's on the roadmap, they're going to say, yeah, it's on the roadmap. But the next question is going to be like, well, when can we have it? And yeah, software companies are notoriously bad for not sticking to roadmaps and things coming later than they should.
Never. Yeah.
It's really, well, it's just really hard to keep up. Like,
yeah.
Shopify is just a juggernaut in the way that they, I think the one thing anyone can respect about them is that they continue to ship, you know, given where they're at. And they don't always get it right, but they do continue to ship, and some things take longer than they should. But just that kind of in the PIM conversation as one use case, you know, the Meta object stuff's a great example of where Airtable's able to leap ahead of, I don't know if there are PIMs available that can handle Meta objects already, but we've done it for clients now. And yeah, I think it's a strong use case. I wouldn't say I wouldn't just be putting Airtable into my business to do PIM. I think you need to think a bit bigger than that. But I certainly would be comparing it. If I was looking at spending 150 grand on a PIM, I would, and I wasn't completely blown away by it, what it was going to do, I'd certainly take some time to look at Airtable in a bit more detail.
So it's interesting. You touched on the next question I got, which is that wider product lifecycle management piece, and that you said, yeah, I wouldn't just do it for the PIM piece. Think wider than that. Now, some businesses, bigger businesses, where they have other software for some of the PLM, like the buyers and the merchandisers who are doing their range planning, assortment planning, et cetera, in there. They might have the ERP where the master SKUs are getting set up, the barcodes are generated, POs. Mm-hmm. That then enables them to raise orders. They've got a PIM to push e-commerce, all these things. One of the questions I've got around Airtable is, what's the connectivity like? What are the integration options where people have got some systems that they don't want to change, but other things they want to do in Airtable? Is it all API based? You know, are there other formats for pushing data in and out?
Yeah, this is where it really wins. So every Airtable base, bear in mind, like you can add like columns to your base, you can add all different column formats, you can create new tables within your database literally on the fly, and Airtable dynamically builds the API for that base as you're doing that work. So if you've ever worked with something like Zapier or make.com, you can have your Airtable base key set up and you can be adding fields like live in the database, and then you can flick your tab to make, refresh, and a field that you've just added has just appeared. So now if you think about when you're trying to get systems to connect together, and you realize like, oh, we need a unique identifier, or we need a central base where we match all the different keys for product between our different systems. It's like, oh, I could just build that and have an interface on it and then connect all of that up. So you're able to solve solve some of those problems around data, like really, really quickly. I think the other, what I really meant though, in terms of thinking bigger, isn't just like the wider product lifecycle. I think the thinking bigger is about having the conversation about, you know, how are we using email in the business? How are we doing project management or product management in the company? Like, where are all the projects being tracked? Where is our, you know, this is part of PLM, I guess. Like, where's our merch plan? Where's our trade plan? Where do we plan our campaigns? And that conversation around where's planning done, combined with what Excel files and Google Sheets are we using? And then if you add on top of that, how are we communicating? How do we use Teams, Slack, Gmeet? It's the businesses or the leaders that are able to look at all of those three areas and then present a combined case that find the fastest way to bring some value from Airtable into their business. And doing like your product data is actually a relatively high barrier to doing it, because you really need to plan it out and get it right, because it's your data structure that you're trying to sort, and there's going to be some data import. You may be better off just starting to use it for project management or managing like your e-commerce checklist in like a timeline and migrating stuff over from a Monday or an Asana, and then adding some of these other things in later. Doesn't need to be a big project.
Is that typically how you start with your clients? Are you mainly working on the product lifecycle management and product data management, or do you sometimes do start them smaller on just moving over some of those kind of day-to-day project management pieces?
I guess it depends. Like, I think our... So I could take, I'll take an example of a company we're working with at the minute. They've got 365 employees in total, and they've raised in like the tens of millions of pounds. And when they came to us, they were specifically looking at the PIM aspect. So they were trying to find an alternative to a very well-known PIM to connect to Shopify and do their 15 stores. When we showed them like how we map things out and how to think about this kind of three-dimensionally from a planning, data, and a communication perspective, when they mapped all of that out, it completely changed where they wanted to start their journey. And when you're a bigger business, which they are, just getting going on planning, so having all of their campaigns and promotions and all of that organized and a bit of product development, that in itself is an 8 to 12 week journey, because there's 40, 50 people involved in doing that, right? You could scale that back down to say, like, for any business, like it planning is often ends up in a few places. And often I find, I'm sure you do as well, when you go into a business and you start looking at technology and what projects should be done, they often don't have a good handle on what projects are even happening right now. So actually a good starting point is to put all the projects in Airtable and say, when do all of these start and finish? Because you can't actually decide to do one of the bigger Airtable projects until they work out where their resource is at. And that in its case, that itself often is a really good way to go, oh, look, this is quite handy, isn't it, for planning and seeing how things work. And they go, oh, yeah, what if, as well as seeing our projects, we could see everything else that's going on. Yeah, that's the place to get going. So,
yeah, that's a common one I come up across, where people want to move really fast in one team, but the resource dependency in others not available for 6 months, and therefore you start, and then within 2 months you've had to stop and pause it, and then that kills the project. So, yeah,
it's amazing for resource planning and like timelines and putting in like the number of hours you've got available off people and seeing like team utilization. We're using all of that stuff for our services, and it's amazing. But yeah, I don't expect e-commerce businesses that haven't got, you know, full project management offices and product managers and big tech teams to be using it like that. But certainly you want to have that overview of what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting, actually, from a PMO perspective, a lot of programs, because just talking to a client at the moment, on a replatforming project, but actually it's a program because there are loads of other sub-projects that feed in that have dependencies, and that's when that resource planning is critical, because otherwise you end up stalling in one part because of not planning from the other. One of the questions I've got actually around ATEN is the integrations bit, because I know they've got a marketplace, but quite limited. Every single tech vendor has like an ecosystem of partners and integrations, and those integrations can either mean we've spoken to them or we've actually done some proper integration work and there's data connectivity. So I'd love to know, for things like the big e-com platforms like Shopify's, Adobe, BigCommerce, etc., how connected is it already if you set up your data structures in Airtable to be able to just push it automatically into like Shopify and vice versa? Versus how much work do you as like as an Airtable consultant specialist have to do to get those connections working?
So that it's not connected to the major platforms is the short answer. But it's built to be, in the same way it's trying to solve this problem of making it really easy for data to flow within Airtable. They've built the platform in a way to make it really easy to get data in and out and build those connections. So, and it's often some of the, what I saw at PeopleVox, the warehouse software I started at, we took a different strategy towards integration than almost everybody else in our space. We decided not to build any connectors to anything. We built a Magento 1 connector and got burnt so badly, we were like, I can't imagine going through the pain of doing this with another e-commerce platform. So we didn't. And then we worked with partners to write our integrations. I think that partner opportunity it is the one that we're serving with Airtable. But also the reason we took that strategy at PeopleVox was we also realized everybody wants integration to work in a slightly different way. And particularly with product data, like a really simple example is when you create a product on Shopify, we might apply tags automatically based on the information we've got in Airtable. It's a really simple automation to do. So we apply tags, but then lots of merchants have other apps that also apply tags once products have been created. So if we then just pushed a dumb update to tags again at some point in the future, we're going to break a whole load of stuff. So what we've really kind of really focusing on actually is being very process oriented in how we design, very data focused, and very like, we'd rather spend 80% of our time doing the design and research and requirements gathering and 20% of our time doing the build work than be constantly reworking stuff and figuring stuff out. So it's definitely a measure twice, cut once is the best approach, because it is custom. It is going to be a custom integration, but if you're working for a brand doing that, it means you're going to have to make a lot of decisions that you possibly haven't had to make up until now, and you need to make sure you got all the right people involved to make those decisions. And that's probably one of the hardest bits we find. People haven't made a lot of decisions about product data, and people are doing stuff in different ways. So.
Yes, indeed. Let's talk about costs, because this is the thing I'm really interested in, because having worked on quite a few PIM implementations, and you have your upfront discovery, you have your implementation, your testing, your release, and you've got your ongoing monthly fees. You often, if I take a retailer, it's around 10 million, and might have a product catalog of about 5,000 SKUs. It might well be a 15 to 20K setup fee, and then a monthly fee of, annual fee. It can be anywhere from 30K upwards. Where are you seeing how does the cost model compare first? And where's the bulk of the cost, and how much ongoing do people expect to pay?
Yeah, so there's definitely a software as a service kind of operating expense advantage with Airtable, in that they've got various versions, but really for the kind of workflows we're talking about, you'd need to be on their business version or their enterprise scale version. And the business version is $45 per person per month if it's billed annually, or it's $54 a month billed monthly. There's another set of pricing on their enterprise scale version, which is slightly more, but you need to be, you need to commit to a certain number of users. And that really changes, you know, it's a, it's an enterprise sale process from their perspective. So that client I mentioned before that's got 350 odd employees, they're in the enterprise scale camp. But for most companies getting started, you'd be looking at that business, the business model, which is the $45 a month or $54 a month per user. So that kind of, I guess, links back to that other point I was making of using it for lots of things. What I found with most brands is they're spending money on Asana or ClickUp. You can pretty much be cost neutral on your Airtable bill by getting rid of an Asana or a ClickUp or a Trello and embedding Airtable properly. So it kind of, Airtable's paid for itself at that point. And then in terms of how we work, we've been doing projects like on all different scales. We've only been doing projects for the last, well, we've been doing it for a year and a half. We've done probably 22, 23 like meaningful, like big app builds in total across 13 different clients, ranging from sort of 5 million to like 200 million in revenue. I would say for anyone between the 5 and the 200 million, it's certainly going to be like cost favorable versus an off-the-shelf PIM. But because it's custom, the cost of actually doing it could vary significantly. We feature matched a PIM with Passenger Clothing, who are a outdoor brand. They were, I think they were number, they're in the Fast Track 100. I can't remember if they were the top business last year or where they were, but they certainly did well. They just raised £19 million in funding. And we feature matched all the PIMs on the market, and all of the other PIMs were coming in at about, you know, four grand a month for what we were doing, with about a £20,000 to £30,000 upfront fee. And yeah, let's say it, yeah, well, straight away you're saving about £3,000 a month from the ongoing. And then some of that is kind of lost to, yeah, we with a lot of clients, we've got an ongoing kind of service agreement where we're continuing to do the building and the support with them. So that's going to kind of eat away a little bit of that. And then kind of on that upfront fee, we tend to be cost neutral, but it depends on, yeah, if you were looking at putting in a really entry-level PIM that's super simple, like a Plitix, for example, you can sign up online and there's like a 3K implementation fee. For something really simple, it could be more like that, but for something more advanced, it's going to be a lot more money, you know. And we're still figuring it out, to be honest, James. Like it's definitely part of the process, is working out what to charge for it. What I'm not prepared to do is compromise on quality. So kind of our biggest thing is to do really good design work, which, and be very process oriented, which we are, and also, you know, be thinking ahead. So one of the drawbacks of building custom software, like anything, is you can end up with a monolith, right? If you don't plan it out right and you don't really think about where things are going to go, you could end up like any, you know, we've all seen that custom monolith inside a retailer where everyone's like, what the hell were they building? This is ridiculous. We're never going to unpick this. So we don't want Airtable to turn into another one of those. So definitely a, you know, focus from our side on the quality of the build and the quality of the design at the minute over volume of sort of knocking them out. It's certainly it's not quick. Yeah, I'm what other things? Quick. It's not quick, high quality and cheap. It's that still that triangle if you need to pick one of the three. But it could well be that in the past the PIMs were slow, yeah, medium quality and very expensive, and we only need to beat it on, you know, a couple of aspects of that triangle, and we definitely do.
I found this really interesting. We've gone through all the key questions. I guess there might be some people listening thinking, I really want to ask more because I'm not convinced by some of this, or I want to find out how it'd work in my use case. How can they reach out?
Yeah, so if you just email me directly is the best way. So Oliver at noloapps.com. So Oliver, OLIVER at Nolo, N-O-L-O, apps.com is the best way to get in touch. Or reach out to me on LinkedIn if we're already connected. That's where I'm hanging out most of the time in terms of the content that we're putting out. So you'll see Nolo Apps at the minute. We're just sort of a holding page on our website, working on all of that type of stuff at the minute. But our focus has been on building the internal team and our capability, you know, versus some of the marketing stuff. There's certainly plenty of demand for this type of work we're finding.
I really appreciate you coming on. I'm really interested. I've enjoyed watching the journey. I think it's a great idea. I'm hoping in the not too distant future, I can find a project where it's relevant for us to have a conversation and bring you in to do some exciting data work. So let's watch this space.
Yeah, that'd be great. We'd love to get in the mix and get your view on it up against some of the other systems that you know really well. So the more kind of experts and knowledge experts we can get involved and showing them what's possible, it can help shape where we're going with it, because the story of what's possible is kind of being written at the minute, I think, at least for the next few years.
Excellent. Thanks everyone who's listening. I hope you really enjoyed it. I think it's a cracking episode. Do reach out to Oliver if you want to find out more or probe on any of the areas we discussed. Keep your ears open for the next episode. We drop one every week. And don't forget to give us that rating on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever else you're listening and watching before you sign up. Until next week, everyone, take care. For more information on this topic, head over to replatform.fm for our audio podcasts. To discuss a project, or if you'd like to chat about any of the topics covered in this episode in more detail, please reach out to myself, James Gird, or my co-host, Paul Rogers, via LinkedIn and Twitter. Thanks again for listening, and keep your ears peeled for the next episode.